We got a packed night tonight, and it's great to be back. We got on deck Carolyn Henry. She's out at Livingston County. She is a chief out there for the prosecutor's office. She's running for the county prosecutor's seat, and I must tell you, I've known Carolyn for quite some time. It's going to be great to have her on the show. We have one of my dearest friends and one of the best in the city, Hank Winchester. He's coming up today, and we're going to talk a little bit about the media and the legal world for which we sit. We also have the distinct pleasure of having the Oakland County prosecutor on tonight, Karen McDonald. And, you know, she is a pillar right now. She has made her name in that seat and has done a lot of work. And I'm excited to hear what she has going on and what the accomplishments. Last but not least, tonight, we're going to have someone running for the Supreme Court, Professor Kimberly Thomas. And I must tell you, one of the big things of this show, and we talk about every time, is who are the candidates? Who do we vote for? How do we get the information we need to know? So tonight, we got a packed show. We're also going to touch base. I just, you know, there's a lot of big things happening. Dee Warner. She was found, and obviously murdered, after 3 years. We're going to touch base on that as well. We'll be right back with, our special guest tonight, Carolyn Henry, just after this. So I must tell you this. I've known our next guest for quite some time. I knew her when she was a defense attorney, just doing, you know, everything under the sun you can possibly imagine. Trials. And then from there, ultimately, she gets into the prosecutor's office as a deputy chief or chief, and now is running for that seat. Carolyn, you with us?
I am, yes. Good evening. Thank you so much. Nice to talk with you, Todd.
It's great having you. So first and foremost, you know, Livingston County, it used to be this place where, and I must say, you know, you didn't have, I mean, obviously, there was crime, but it seems to have had an uptick out there. I was just, you know, we were just recently out there and listening to the cases. How is your docket? How is the prosecutor's office? And, you know, how many cases are you all handling out there as a number?
Yeah, I appreciate it. We definitely have seen an increase in certainly some different types of crime around here. I think with any offices around and throughout the state of Michigan, what we've seen an increase in, especially in Livingston County, is probably the organized retail crime cases as well as the retail fraud cases. And I think it's just essentially where our county is located. We have a number of different expressways that are easy access for a number of people who are coming from out of town, out of county, and that's primarily what we're seeing an increase in out here is the retail crime, the organized retail crime as well. You know, we still have our usual drunk drivers. We have the usual drug cases. I think there has definitely been an increase in the methamphetamine cases. But right. For the most part, I'd still consider us an extremely safe community out here in Livingston County, and I'm so thankful for that.
Amen to that. Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's one of the, as far as counties go, and located so close to other places that have serious crime, Livingston County is a safer place, albeit even with the uptick and crime. But law enforcement there is a serious business. So what is your current position with the, the prosecutor's office right now?
Sure, absolutely. Thank you. So I currently serve as the chief assistant prosecutor under our elected prosecutor, David Reeder. So he had run and was successful in his campaign and election in 2020. So we had taken office in 2021. And then I've been lucky enough to file to run for the prosecuting attorney for our next administration. And I'm currently running unopposed.
Well, that's awesome. That's good to know. I mean, so the fact of the matter, I had a national case in front of your boss when he was a sitting judge. I can't imagine he is a no-nonsense guy, and I got to imagine a great boss to work for.
He's been amazing, I will say. David Reeder, obviously, if anybody knows of him, has heard of him, he is essentially a Livingston County icon. He's served as a county commissioner for a number of years and then was elected to the bench. He served as a circuit court judge and then served as the chief of the circuit court for a number of years. And then he had stepped down from the bench in order to run for the prosecutor's office, much like I believe one of your guests who's going to be on tonight as well. And so obviously some changes needed to be made in the prosecutor's office here, and David Reeder took on the task, and he was successful at it. So he's just been an amazing person to work for and work with hand in hand for the last 4 years. He's just a huge wealth of knowledge as far as community. You know, even me being a lifelong resident of Livingston County, working side by side with David Reeder, I've just learned so much more about our community, and he is just absolutely committed to Livingston County, to the community here, and just to keeping our community safe and just the continued positive aspect of our community.
Wisdom doesn't fall off a tree. You're not walking down the street and get hit by something and all of a sudden they're wise. David Reeder, Judge Reeder, I just remember we had major case, and I was so impressed with how he handled the courtroom and handled the rulings, and it was impressive. But you too, I mean Carolyn, you sat on the defense side and then went to the prosecutor's side. I gotta believe that you know, your perspective of seeing things has also made you just a perfect fit to come in and run the show. What was the biggest change for you as a defense attorney coming into the prosecutor's chair? I did the opposite. I went from the prosecutor's chair to the defense chair. What was it going from the other?
I think, you know, what surprised me so much was the number of cases that come through our office. And I think, you know, as a defense attorney, you obviously handle clients, you handle clients' families. And from my standpoint here, it's really handling cases from the aspect of being mindful from our law enforcement partners, as well as being really talking and protecting the rights of crime victims. So I think that's really been an eye-opening experience just to see and talk and work with our victims of crimes.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's that obviously, you know, we have the Victims' Rights Act, and it's sacrosanct in the prosecutor's office to make sure they have a voice. And I can't think of a better voice for them, knowing you. I don't know how long we go back, but it's over 20 years.
Absolutely.
You know, I can't think of a better voice for Livingston County and the prosecutor's office. And it's a blessing to have you out there. And the people of Livingston County are fortunate to have someone of your caliber. And I truly appreciate you, and Godspeed. Great talking with you.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate the time you spent with me tonight. Thank you.
Awesome. We'll talk soon.
Sounds great. Thanks, Todd. Take care.
Well, the next guest we have coming on is Hank Winchester, and I must tell you, a guy that has a pulse on the city of Detroit and the state of Michigan, none better than Hank Winchester. We'll be right back just after this. We're back. So, you know, I'm not going to get much into the case because I obviously did the declaration of death portion of this case, and that was proving by a clear and convincing evidence that Dee Warner was dead. Well, sure enough, we won that case, and sometime thereafter she was found in a airtight, might as well have been a vacuum sealed fertilizer barrel, the autopsy was done, finished today, and clearly, you know, it was murder that is going to be put down a homicide and strangulation. So it's sad, but hopefully some closure. One of the gentlemen, one of the dear friends, a guy that has his pulse on all of Tri-County and the state of Michigan, Hank Winchester, Hey, Hank, you with me,
friend,
my man?
How you doing?
I'm great.
What's up? How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I mean, listening to you talk about the Warner case there, which is horrific and sad, it takes me back to all the big cases where Todd Flood was our legal expert on some of the biggest and most infamous trials in Detroit. I mean, the list is pretty long, isn't it?
Well, we do have a history, yes, and the list is long. And I got to tell you, always a pleasure. And working with you, anyone that comes on and is an expert or someone that works with you, you know, it's a sigh of relief because there's plenty of reporters out there, and it's different. You, I can breathe, and it's something that you have taken time in the city for which we live, in the state for which we live, to become a household name. So how many big stories have you been working on lately in the news? And, you know, obviously the ambulance fiasco and how people were being gouged, you know, was a big chapter. But you've taken on several others, and, you know, since that time, what's new on the horizon?
You know, I'm very fortunate. And first of all, thank you for your kind words right back at you. But I'm very fortunate to be able to kind of be in a particular beat, if you will, of consumer and of helping people. And unfortunately, as you know, because you have a pulse on the community and you're talking with everybody, there's no shortage of people that need help. And unfortunately, a lot of people are just getting downright screwed. There's no better way to put it. So, thankfully, Channel 4, you know, has continued the consumer advocacy campaign, and that's what I get to do. But I will tell you that ambulance story is that one that I continue to get emails and tips on because, unfortunately, because of the relationship with Blue Cross and also the way Superior Ambulance is handling this one. I mean, you've got some people that are getting bills for $15,000, $20,000 non-emergent transport, and they're going just a couple miles. Yeah. It really makes no sense, right?
It's crazy. And, you know, the blowhorn needs to, you know, the bells need to be rang as it relates to this issue, because we ask, you know, why are things so expensive on the consumer side of things? And here you go. You want to talk about price gouging? That's price gouging. That is something, and I'm glad you're tackling it. You know, what comes to my mind every time, you know, all the work you did for us in Flint. You know, I'll never forget. Do you remember us walking down the sidewalk when in downtown Flint? That. Still to this day, your work on that story, on that case, and still the tragedy that's out there, the people of Flint still suffer. You know, that was something, I don't know where it ranks within your world, but that to me was one you did yeoman's work.
Well, I thank you for that. And you were one of the very few people who, you know, we're willing to be a constant presence in Flint. I mean, some people here in Detroit think of Flint as being, you know, another world.
Right.
And for that moment in time, and as you mentioned, this is still ongoing. There are still pipes that have not been replaced. There are still children that need aid. But I remember first getting there at the height of it and seeing, you know, women, children, seniors standing in lines, as you saw, for about a half a mile just to get one case of water in the winter. Wow. And then taking 2-3 bus lines to get home with children who were sick. And the first images, and we've talked about this, that I saw and that stuck out in my head was that, just this urgent need. It felt like a third world country, and it was 45 minutes north up 75. So it was really a story that, you know, ended up captivating the attention of people around the world, thankfully, to get the resources that they need. But yes, you were there. You had feet on the ground, and a lot of people were scared to touch it, literally and figuratively.
Right.
Didn't want to get near it.
Right.
And, you know, I'm glad you mentioned it, because it's still a huge problem. And there's people like Dr. Mona Hannah Atisha who are still fighting it every single day.
I can't imagine, you know, but you're right. You know, one of the most powerful things you, your colleagues, and I tell this to young lawyers or attorneys that are just coming out, the, one of the best assets in our city, in our courtroom world, are investigative reporters, the reporters that shine a light, because it helps the cases, both from a defense standpoint and a prosecution standpoint. How often, you know, I got to believe you see the difference you make, but tell us, other than Flint, a case that you made a difference and you could see, and other than the ambulance, that you could see that the First Amendment, your job, made a significant impact either on a prosecution or a defense.
Man, that's tough. I mean, I will tell you, and we both watched this one very closely, but, you know, I do remember many interviews being done with Bob Becerra that were not very flattering for him, and ended up at Lisa Lindsay very, very cleverly made that a central piece of the case. It basically taking the interviews he'd done with Channel 4 and with Dateline NBC, and you know, here's supposed to be a man who's in complete shock and despair, but certainly was, you know, showing a different face with the television cameras, and very similarly with Stephen Grant.
All right.
His obsession with the media really became one of the central arguments that Eric Smith at the time was trying to convey to the jury, that the focus wasn't on finding his wife, it was on his next TV interview. Right. So it's interesting in the legal system. I think sometimes lawyers, you know, like working with the media, and then other times I think they think, oh God, keep that damn reporter away. But but in those particular cases, I think that it really did help paint a picture to the jury that they otherwise, you know, would not have been able to see, and to visually see it and hear their words is
so powerful.
Impactful.
Yeah, so yeah. Powerful. My man, I love you, buddy. You are one of the best, and Detroit is blessed to have you. So enjoy the rest of your evening, and thank you so much for coming on.
I appreciate you, my friend. Thank you so much for your time.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Well, we'll be back. We have obviously coming up, Karen McDonald, the prosecutor for Oakland County. And, you know, we got to bring in Todd Perkins. Todd Perkins, you know, what would the show be without, you know, some voice from Todd? We got to have that. And then after that, we will be privileged to talk with Professor Kimberly Thomas from the University of Michigan. Go Blue. We'll be right back just after this. We're back. We're getting Karen McDonald on right now. She's just finishing something up. She'll be with us shortly, but filling in on the gaps of the case with Dee Warner. I got to tell you, I'm not going to get into the details and the evidence of that case, but I will say the Michigan State Police, you know, yeoman's work around the clock for a lot of time, Detective Drurer and, you know, the prosecutor's office, obviously, they prosecuted, they bound the case over. What does that mean? They had a preliminary exam, they bound the case over prior to finding the body. And that's no easy task in and of itself. However, the case is never over. Even when it gets to a jury, never over. And the fact of the matter is that more evidence came to light, and they found her. And I got to tell you, I represent the estate, the kids, in this matter. And you can't, we can have sympathy. I don't know how we have empathy, you know, unless you walk through those shoes. Hopefully this brings us one, they get one more step closer to having some closure, which is a difficult, obviously difficult and painful thing within this. And, having been involved in cases where the victim hadn't been found yet, and prosecuting or working on a nobody case is difficult, obviously, to say the least, because you got to get into the cause and manner of death. And you need experts to be able to do that. In this particular case, when I did the declaration of death case, which is all public information, we had to show through tons of resources that she was obviously dead. So anyway, one step closer for justice for Dee Warner. Well, we are fortunate to have in Oakland County a prosecutor for the people, someone that sat on the bench out in Oakland County, someone that represents the people of the state of Michigan. And I must tell you, not every prosecutor in the state of Michigan, very few. I could say David Layton may be one, but not prosecutors that have dockets like Oakland County actually try cases. But Karen McDonald, she actually tries cases. She's has her pulse on what's in her office, and we're fortunate to have her with us. Karen, you there?
I am. Good evening.
Good evening. So obviously a lot going on in your office, and you've been there now how many years? Three?
Just shy of four. We're actually up for re-election in November, if you can believe it.
Well, I know time flies, and
it does fly. Yeah.
And the citizens of Oakland County are fortunate to have you, and hopefully, you know, that election process is one which, you know, everyone sees the light and is thankful that you have their back. Not everyone wakes up in the morning and says, "Oh, you know, who's in courtroom 303 handling the homicide?" Right, so. They count on you, and you do it. In three, almost 4 years, I can't imagine how many things you've accomplished in that time frame. Tell the people around the state of Michigan that listen to the show, how many cases does Oakland County have as far as a prosecution in a given year?
Oh, gosh. Thousands. You know, one of my important jobs, I think, was to, before I took office, if you would ask people, who's the Wayne County prosecutor, everybody knows it's Kim Worthy.
Right.
Most people weren't sure who the Oakland County prosecutor was. And I think a big responsibility is really educating everyday people, what does the prosecutor do? What does the prosecutor's office do? Even a lot of lawyers don't know that.
True.
And so we prosecute every a criminal case from 30-some different law enforcement agencies, misdemeanors, and felonies. We also represent DHHS in child abuse and neglect cases in our juvenile division, and we adjudicate juveniles. So this can be anything from, you know, a traffic issue that is criminal, or a nonviolent misdemeanor like driving while license suspended, all the way to very serious violent crime involving, you know, child sexual assault, homicide, trafficking. I created a trafficking division. It's one of, I think, only two in the state where we don't just focus on drug trafficking, but human trafficking. Michigan is eighth in the nation for human trafficking.
Wow.
And so often the trafficking of humans and drugs are intertwined. Traffickers keep their victims dependent on them by supplying them drugs, which they are addicted to. That is something new that we have done. And you know, those cases are really challenging, but also really, really important. These are really, really dangerous people who are profiting off of vulnerable young women and getting them addicted to drugs and keeping them dependent on them. So that's just one example. But the other thing we do, though, is we have a whole division just dedicated to victim advocacy. I brought into the office our canine advocacy program, We now have three dogs that sit with children.
So cool.
Who have experienced really awful things, and they have to go in into a courtroom and tell a judge or a jury, and the dog sits with them and helps them.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And we really train prosecutors and everyone in our office really about, you know, how to interact with victims in a trauma informed way, because there's a lot of trauma. I like to say my job is one of the only jobs where what you see on TV is very similar to actually what the job is like. All those shows about prosecutors, you know, it's very intense, and these are trials that are, you know, so important, and they're very difficult and emotionally charged, but then just really so satisfying when you know that you're advocating for justice to people who have been victimized and hurt and wronged.
That's right. You know, I have told you before, I see you wear your heart on your sleeve. You work, and I don't think people know this part about you, but you're a tireless worker. How many hours you put in, do you think? And you worked in all gamuts. You were a prosecutor. You were worked at a private law firm that had to bill hours. Then you became a judge, and then you then now you're the elected official. How many hours in comparison to everything else do you put in, you think, in an average week with the Oakland County Prosecutor's Office?
I
gotta believe it's over 60 to 70 hours.
I was up at 4:30 in the morning, and I was going through all of my emails and the day-to-day things that I need to be. I look at every review, every single charge that we make every single day. I get a list, and I look at the charge and the jurisdiction and who the victim was, and oftentimes I'm calling somebody and saying, why did we charge this? Can you tell me more about that? So those are just, you know, the average that I am keeping in touch with, you know, lots of decisions you have to make about if you're going to charge a capital case. There are certain cases that I actually make that come up to me, and I make the final call on, you know, cases with kids.
Sure.
And how we're going to charge juveniles, with always an eye towards trying to the best we can, treating kids like kids and not criminalizing normal adolescent behavior, but also our number one priority is public safety.
I can tell this to everybody out there. Having spoken with you and having watched you, I know that you're up early and you're not home late. I'm sure your husband is a saint. and the fact of the matter is, we're fortunate and blessed to have you in the chair, as I call it, in Oakland County. And Godspeed to you. Thank you. And I'm hoping from our lips to God's ears to making it happen, you get the seat again for the next term. So thanks for coming on, and I truly appreciate you.
Anytime. Thank you.
All right. We'll be right back. We got Todd Perkins. Got to have Perkins on for a minute. And we also got Kimberly Thomas running for the Michigan Supreme Court. Someone that I think you'll learn a lot about, and what she does currently and why she's running for the big seat. So we'll be right back just after this. We're back. You know, it's amazing how quick an hour goes. We need like three more. We have two people on, and I'm really honored and excited to bring in Professor Kimberly Thomas from the University of Michigan, and obviously, Todd Perkins. Professor, are you with us?
I am. Hi, Todd. How are you?
I'm good.
Thanks
got Todd cubed. So,
yes.
Perkins, you there, my man?
I am.
Yeah.
You've just got superstars on your show tonight. Not that you don't every week, but you really have some real superstars.
Yeah, I'm the strings on the Goodyear blimp compared to you, my friend. So, Professor, you know, Todd and I, we're in the gauntlet every day. So we're not always, fortunately, or unfortunately, you know, we are in, as I say it, in the Coliseum. You know, you want to find Perkins, he's in a courtroom someplace, or myself. Mm-hmm. Tell us what it is, what you're teaching, and why, you know, you're running for the Supreme Court. And I applaud that, and I've looked at your bio, and I'm excited about that. But tell the state of Michigan, because we cover the Great Lakes here.
Yeah, no, thank you, Todd. So my name's Kimberly Thomas. I'm running for the 8-year term this November on the Michigan Supreme Court. Really, I care so deeply about the quality of justice that we receive. So I teach at the University of Michigan Law School, and I teach mostly students how to practice. So I'm actually in our court system with students, you know, helping them learn how to be ethical and effective practitioners and lawyers in the future. And so the work that I've done mentoring students, of course, you know, makes me very proud of the ideals of our system and makes me want to work really hard to make sure that everybody across Michigan can have the legal system we deserve. And so I'm really thrilled to run for the Michigan Supreme Court.
Have you, and I don't want to get into rulings or opinions that have come out. I'm scratching my head, to be candid with you, at the United States Supreme Court, and we can talk about ethics with that at another date. I still don't understand the duplicity with the rules of their not having to have ethical oversight. But that being a side note, is there anything that you have seen that, you know, you scratched your head and said, not so much. You know, I didn't see that in the constitutional issue for which they may have decided. And, you know, or obviously the fact of the matter is it's so important for listeners to know. We just had Karen McDonald on. They didn't know. A lot of people didn't know who the Oakland County prosecutor mm-hmm. is. Mm-hmm. How important it is to know and vote on this, you know, justices for the Supreme Court. Perkins, can you add to that, or you agree with that?
Well, I'm excited to see her running. I'm excited to see who she's running with. I'm excited for the possibilities of what the justice system will how it will benefit from someone who, you know, she's coming from an intellectual capacity, but not only that, infused in her intellectual capacity is the component of practicing. Sometimes you get people who just have, you know, theoretical knowledge and it's not a practical base behind it. But, you know, right. if I could be so forward and say, you know, Justice Thomas is already, you know, giving us a benefit. And, you know, I always say it's the women that changed the court. You know, it's the women in the past 10 years. It's the women that changed the court from what I saw from law school when I used to work at the Court of Appeals, how it changed. But now I see and I'm excited. And, I, you know, I've looked, you know, once I saw that she was running, you know, I didn't know she was going to be on, but I've her resume and looked at her pedigree and I'm excited.
That makes two of us. So Professor, and so bold to say justice, tell it in your own words, your own thoughts. I mean, is there anything in the, you know, basic precedents that came down over the year or something that you thought, you might have issue with, or is there something that, you see in you know, the state for which you want to dedicate, you know, time to that you see is not being dedicated to?
Yeah. So I think I really appreciate your comments. Thank you so much. You know, I think our court is headed in the right direction, but there is still work left to do. You know, I was fortunate to be on the bipartisan task force on juvenile justice reform and really appreciated the opportunity to work collaboratively with stakeholders across Michigan to think about how we can solve some of the problems in our court system. And while, of course, the Michigan Supreme Court makes decisions that, you know, those have tremendous impacts on people across the state, the court also provides leadership for all of our local courts and the ability to think about how we can make our court system more transparent, more user-friendly, is a really important piece of the job. And so I'm really excited for both of those roles.
That's exciting. As far as the coming from academia, but you actually have the practical aspect, as Todd Perkins was talking about, you know, the teaching of how to practice law, how to you know, go at it in a ethical sense. Is there, as you see the generation, the next generation and the generations that you're teaching, what excites you, about the new group of lawyers coming out and the new aspect of where the law is going, artificial intelligence and the writing skills and all the rest. Talk about a little bit about, since you have that practical side of teaching, what you're seeing in that world, and how big the changes may be in our state as time goes on, if you could pull out the crystal ball.
Yeah, yeah. No, I graduated from Harvard Law School 25 years ago, and I've got, you know, hundreds of maybe thousands of clients under my belt since then. And so certainly care a lot about what people's practical experience in our court is. And, you know, I think our students, like myself, you know, I'm really proud of our legal system. And yet I think there's still work to be done. And that work, allows us to think creatively. How can we use technology to make our legal system better? How can we use it to make it more fair for everybody across the state, right? Whether you, wherever you live or however much income you have, so that it can be, maybe we can, you know, use some of these new innovations to solve old problems. And so I think that's a really exciting possibility.
Sure. Perkins, my man, we got a couple minutes left. What are your thoughts? You got any?
Yeah. Well, I'm interested. You know, you mentioned about AI, and you know, I'm very interested in how Professor Justice, like to speak positivity into existence, but how that, you know, I'm concerned because I think that there, especially with the younger generation who their knowledge and their experience with technology is probably more vast than, you know, dinosaur that I'm becoming. But I'm trying not to become a dinosaur. I do want to, you know, continue to educate myself on the use of technology. But, you know, this AI, these AI created documents, how much of a concern do you believe that can, you know, particularly not only in the judicial system, but in academia? Because I'm imagining you've experienced that as a professor.
Yeah, yeah. So certainly it's a topic of discussion in our law schools around the country, making sure that, lawyers are keeping their clients' confidences, right? If you put them into an AI generator, then it's exposed to the world. And so really making sure that lawyers are thinking about these new technologies in ways that comply with all of their ethical obligations. And they're new things that we haven't thought of. And so we really need to, be talking about those and, helping people understand what the implications are.
Yeah, I'm nervous, but yet excited about AI. I am a dinosaur. I have to have hard copies and books still. I get headaches looking at these computers. In the big scheme of things, you're obviously brilliant. You're obviously passionate. You're a teacher, and I'm very fond to be. My parents were teachers for 42 years. What is it that excites you? What are your hobbies? Tell the people out there, your Midwestern values of what you see on the bench and how what makes you How do you have fun?
Yeah. So I'm a mom of two school-age kids. So one thing I do is, you know, I'm a volunteer science Olympiad coach. I do that for fun.
Cool.
I'm a track mom. I also am a runner. So I actually I love running the Free Press Marathon and the Free Press Half Marathon. So that will be on my fall agenda to try to do one of those.
Well, there you go.
And I love our state parks. So that's where my family and I spend some time. Those are what I do for fun.
That's awesome. Well, I got to tell you, we're going to have you back on. Todd Perkins and I love talking with you, and we're going to do it again sometime. It's really, truly a pleasure having you, and I'm excited for you to be on the Supreme Court of the state of Michigan. So thanks for coming on, Professor. We'll be back next month with Behind the Bench. Thanks for having us.